I'm fond of a Native American proverb which says that the land is not something we inherit from our ancestors. Rather, it's something that we borrow from our children. I think that's an important stewardship statement. Worldwide, temperate grasslands are recognized as one of the ecosystems under the greatest risk. In the U.S., awareness of threats to the prairies of the northern Great Plains is growing. This provides an opportunity for ranchers because in this part of the world, those lands are almost exclusively privately owned and managed. The opportunity is for ranchers to partner with conservation-minded organizations to develop projects that are mutually beneficial. Our intent this afternoon is to describe a success story of one of those partnerships and hopefully encourage other ranchers to consider investigating and building those kind of partnerships to their benefit and to the benefit of the resource. So I'm going to begin by asking Al and Simone Wind, who are our case study ranch, to introduce themselves. And if you would, tell us about your desires to get into ranching and describe what your impressions of the property were when you first started managing.
The picture you see on the screen right now is of me and my husband. And one of the things we think is really important is we're actually first-generation landowners. I come from a long line of cowboys, but we're the first people in any one of our families to be able to actually put our name on a piece of property. I just said that. Anyway, in my family, none of them owned more than a saddle and a house in town. This is a picture of my grandparents, and they were trailing cattle from the Dakotas to Laurel, Montana, and that was in 1936. This is a picture of my dad. He worked as a manager on a 1,250-pair cattle outfit for 36 years. He retired in 2004, and he was making only $623 a month. I don't know how far back my cowboy roots go, but I had a cousin that did a family search for us, and he got to some horse thieves, and he decided to stop digging there. So Al and I were both interested in getting into the cattle business before we met. And after we met and got married, we scrimped and we saved to be able to own our own piece of the pie. And if your wedding looks anything like this, you might be a redneck. So the short story is, after a lot of looking, a lot of offers, and a lot of failed attempts, we finally were able to put together a down payment and come up with the ranch that's just outside of Newell, and it's now called the Wind Ranch. Money's still tight. We still scrimp and save. We still feed a wood stove instead of turning a propane furnace on, but it's very cozy and romantic, and we love it there.
So now that we've gone through our impressive resume, I'll give you a brief explanation and a tour of the ranch. It's 3,400 acres. 3,000 acres of it is in what I scientifically in the range map says freaking gumbo. Upland range. Another 400 acres of it is divided among a couple of intermediate running creeks. 200 of that 400 we have in hay production. The other 200 is tied up in one of our grazing units. When we bought the ranch, we knew it wasn't in the best shape. Duh. Friends of ours had told us that the hard grass up there was extremely nutritious. And I remember thinking it must be, because there was a clump of it over there, and then there was another clump of it over here, and I kept thinking if we didn't have cows that could walk and chew at the same time, we were going to be in big trouble. A month after we bought the place, we'd already talked to NRCS long before we'd purchased the place, and they gave us quite a bit of encouragement. And within a month after taking possession of it, Matt Stoltenberg came out and started to do a range inventory. And his conclusion was pretty much on the order of what we already knew, that there ought to be a few more blades of grass, a little bit less open ground, a little bit less cactus. But we were kind of pleased because at least we finally owned our own place. So as we inventoried the place more and more, it became obvious that the riparian areas were in far worse shape than even the upland areas. The riparian plant structure, willows, prairie cord grass, elms, cottonwood, stuff that held our gumbo soils together, were either completely missing or severely degraded. Without that protective vegetation, the creeks had become deep, steep-sided canals. In the places that it hadn't become so steep and deep, the cattle had just been able to walk it out into shallow, open mud holes. As we started to really take an inventory of the ranch, it started to dawn on us that just cutting our numbers back for a little while wasn't going to be enough. So over the first winter of 07 and 08, we started to look at the structural problems that were causing the degradation, both upland and in the riparian. And we decided that one of the big problems we had was that the riparian areas, for the most part, were fenced in with the upland areas. And we all know if we give a cow a choice where it's going to graze between an upland and a riparian. So one of the first things we decided is we'd separate out those two ecological units and we'd start to manage them completely separately. We also thought that as a whole, that the pastures were too big and too few to really implement a progressive management plan. So we wanted to move from 600 to 900 acre pastures to something in the 200 to 250 acre range. And we also knew to do that, we were going to have to increase the availability of stock water on the place. So after the winter of 07 and 08, we asked Matt to come back out, and we kind of unveiled our new management plan. And even though we'd already signed an EQIP contract about 3 months previous, we needed about twice as much pipeline, almost twice as many stock tanks, and a minimum of something like 18 to 20 miles of electric fence to actually accomplish what we thought was going to be the right type of management plan to turn this ground around. So once Matt saw this new plan, I can't even describe how shocked he was. And so his suggestion to us, since we didn't have the money to really implement it, was to try to involve as many other agencies as we possibly could, with our main goal of trying to improve and enhance our unplowed, unbroken native mid-grass prairie, which was one of the most important aspects of that ranch overall to us.
Thanks, Al. Matt, you are a range specialist. You work for the Belfouche River Watershed Partnership. So if you could, tell us a little bit about the partnership and then describe your impressions of the Wynn Ranch and their plans as you first started working with them.
Thank you, Roger. As Roger mentioned, I serve as the project coordinator for the Belfouche River Watershed Partnership. And just briefly, what the Belfouche Partnership is it's a local group of volunteers dedicated to the enhancement of the Belfouche watershed. It's locally led. They're set up as a 501c3. The board members include the chairs of the three conservation districts in the watershed, as well as a member from the Belfouche Irrigation District. Collectively, As a greater part of the watershed group, we involve NRCS, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Game Fish and Parks, local cities, counties, other government agencies, and most importantly, the landowners in the watershed. We have a volunteer management approach. We wait for people to come in to talk to us. Obviously, we have a public outreach activity to draw some attention. But primarily, how we're involved with the ranchers in the area, we provide some cost share for livestock, water development, maybe some cross fencing. And how I got to meet the Winds is we have myself available to provide some technical assistance in doing resource inventories and grazing management plans. So the first time I stepped foot on the Wind Ranch, I think it was one of their first trips from Montana when they were just moving there. And I have to admit, I was about as green as they were coming to the area, although I worked on my graduate program in western South Dakota. This was my first professional job as one of the first ranchers that I'd worked with. Quickly became apparent to me that there was a lot of room potential for improvement on the ranch, but probably more importantly, and I know we're not supposed to profile people, but I think we all do it as human nature. No, all kidding aside, is you could see a lot of potential in Alan Simone. They were very passionate about improving their land, and it was fun to work with some folks like that were so eager to learn. With that, as I said, I was very new at the time as well, and I quickly realized that I was going to need some help from the other partners that we're going to start talking about now.
Thanks, Matt. Steve Fairbairn, you are a private land biologist for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Why are you interested in working with ranchers? And tell us about your initial involvement with the Wind Ranch.
Yeah, thanks, Roger. I work for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Partners for Fish and Wildlife program. What we do is provide technical and financial assistance to private landowners to help restore, improve, and conserve wildlife habitat on their places. This is a nationwide program. We emphasize different things in different areas. What our focus is in western South Dakota is grassland conservation. We have a large area of relatively intact native midgrass prairie that's really important to a whole suite of grassland nesting birds, and so we try to conserve that. We feel that the best way to maintain healthy grassland wildlife populations is to support livestock production on these privately owned grassland habitats. And we do that by helping provide infrastructure that ranchers can use to graze their livestock more effectively and more efficiently. With respect to the Winds in particular, boy, when you first meet them, their conservation-minded approach to livestock management is very evident. They had purchased a piece of property that had been used heavily in the past, and they were in the process of developing a ranch management plan designed to improve the range condition, improve the riparian condition. And when somebody comes to somebody with my profession, in my position, with that kind of ethic that's evident, with a distinct plan, it's really pretty easy to be want to come to the table to be a part of that project. So, yeah, those were my impressions. And
thanks, Steve. Mitch Faulkner, you work as a range management specialist for the Natural Resources Conservation Service. You're in Belfouche. Tell us about the NRCS and how you work with private landowners, and particularly something about the value and development of a conservation plan.
Sure. Thanks, Roger. NRCS helps producers develop conservation plans that are basically focused on their specific ranch goals, and it identifies which natural resource concerns that exist on their operation. So this is all done together between NRCS and the producer, and on the ground is where it's done. Usually the first thing that we do is inventory the resources that are on the ranch. This gives us an idea for those areas for potential and opportunity out there on the ground. And what it really does as well is it captures a nice baseline condition for the operation. It's kind of where we're starting from ground zero. We're looking at what practices are out there already, and we're also looking at kind of the condition of the grasslands and the condition of the resources. Then we'll kind of start to put together some ideas of which conservation practices that we'd want to select to try to address those resource concerns that are out there. What sort of practices, tanks, pipeline, fence, you hear those all the time, would we want to see on the landscape to try to address those resource concerns and meet the landowner's objectives? And we'll usually take a look at a whole different suite of practices. We'll look at a lot of different alternatives before we kind of start to pick one. And then we put a plan down on paper. So we get this conservation plan together. We kind of know what we're doing, what we're going to select, and where we're going to be, and we get it on paper. And that's going to have the practices required to meet the plan objectives and address those resource concerns. And within that plan, we'll have the location, the installation date, identification of the precise practice, all described within that conservation plan. And these practices can be a lot of different things. It just depends on the operation and what the concerns are. They could be fences, water developments, livestock shelters, such as fabricated windbreaks, pasture and hayland seedings, or even full-blown grazing management plans. So these could be quite a few different practices that we could be looking to install. Then the plan is implemented, and that's when we just kick things off. And it's implemented over time, though, and often in phases. And it's good to keep evaluating these plans over and over, keeping the objectives, the original objectives in mind. And also, I can't leave out economic feasibility as well. There's a lot of things you'd like to do, but sometimes we just need to select what we have available and what we can get done. There are some other things that NRCS really helps with, too, and I think this comes out in the planning process. We offer our producers a high-quality operation plan map, and that's actually quite valuable, and it is one of the drivers for this conservation planning process. When you can have a good plan map and get that in front of you and talk about it with the producer, that helps a bunch. The other thing, when we're out there, we offer all sorts of alternative thoughts and suggestions. You know, what kind of practices are out there that might be able to address your problem? And how would they be designed? How would we design this practice to address this? The other thing would be, where should they be located? Is location important? And usually it is. And we as NRCS design a variety of different practices, and we've seen what's worked well on other ranches. So we have a pretty credible eye for a lot of these projects. Finally, with all of our conservation practices, we offer the blueprint design for when that practice is actually being implemented. And so an example of this would be some construction designs for things like grassed waterways or pipeline designs, or it could be something so simple as just a seeding plan for a hayland seeding or a full-blown grazing management plan.
Thanks, Mitch. Alan, Simone, you guys had a dream. Tell us how you made progress in implementing that dream, and also remind us about the management plan you developed.
Thanks, you guys. When the partnership was still coming together in the spring of 08, we went ahead and started to implement our management plan. We started putting in new cross fence, pipeline and tank locations. We started to think about different grazing strategies, whether it be MIG grazing, mob grazing, single pass or multi-pass rotational grazing, and how those might achieve certain goals. With our lack of capital and an overwhelming amount of work to do, we took in custom grazing cattle. It seemed to be a good fit for us at the time. Not only would we benefit from the additional income of doing all of the projects, the pipeline, the fencing work ourselves, we'd also be able to concentrate on completing improvements instead of feeding and calving cattle. Custom grazing would also give us the ability to match cattle numbers to the available resource without having to be involved with an additional operating loan of owning those cattle. We also had to take into account some of the geographic surroundings that are special to our area. Our dense gumbo soils are highly impermeable and highly erosive in nature. In good moisture years, floods occur 3 to 5 times a year and regularly have a 3 to 4 foot vertical rise or more. We got accustomed to finding old fence posts and other debris in the limbs of the few trees that were surviving on the hay fields. The floods can be triggered at any time by a heavy thunderstorm upstream that maybe a drop wouldn't even fall on our place. Sorry. And it can happen at any time of the year. By improving the grass and plant base and not removing as much of it as was done in the past, we hope to minimize the volatility of these floods. We also knew that monitoring was going to be an important aspect in measuring our progress or lack of it. So if we figured we were going to monitor our forage, why not monitor our cattle too? So along with photo points and transects and permanent plot points and grazing records, we also improved our cattle handling facilities and added a scale so that we could get an accurate idea of cattle weights, keep track of calf weights, growth rates, weaning weights, and the like. We decided to adopt the motto, "Ranchers don't grow cattle, grass grows cattle," to describe our philosophy that better grass management can produce better cattle returns. That benefits both us and our custom grazing partner.